Hello, friends. Thanks for tuning in to the Axiom Church podcast. We like to say that we are pioneers participating in the restoration of people and places through Jesus Christ and his kingdom. Hopefully you enjoy this sermon or midweek discussion you're about to hear, and we just hope that you'll engage us and ask questions and dialogue, because we're all on the journey together.
So I was, not just was, I have been for a season sensing a sense of hopelessness at times. Thanks, honey. And it just in the body, in the city, in our world, in our country, I don't know. Like, when you guys like wake up on the morning and you're greeted by the sun, shouldn't we just be like, yes, the day's alive? And yet, like, everybody kind of drags in, and it's like The Walking Dead at times. And I kind of get it. It's like the rest we get in our sleep isn't enough. Like life is just that heavy that we can't even, the sleep that God's given us can't be sufficient enough for taking us back into it again. The sort of rat race continues, and we get submerged in this spirit of dragging our feet. But it's not just that, it's even bigger than that. We're fighting. We're at war with one another. We're at disunion with each other. Everything is a means to an end. Now, everything must be utility or it can't be anything. Like, there's just a real challenge. And what I want to say right at the front end here is that we're inviting this community as a way of bearing witness to Christ, to just permission to have hope, permission to let hope seep in to your way of being, permission to let the light of Christ exist in who you are, permission to go below the surface of cheap smiles, permission to really, at the deepest place, anticipate God's resurrection in you. We can have hope. Our world can have hope. But we must be people of hope. I think we would all agree with that, but I think what we really mean when we agree with that is that we're more like people who are always searching for hope by avoiding our pain. Have you ever noticed that? That often, like, our way of sort of getting through is just by dodging the wrench, you know? It's by dodging the reality. The less I can experience what's the consequences, the less I can experience people on the road, whatever it is, the better I'll be. And nothing in the moment's ever sufficient, because we're always running from the pain. But what if it was like that we don't get to hope by avoiding the storm? We get to hope by entering into the storm, by entering into the pain, by entering into the place of challenge and problem and suffering, but to start to see, as we enter into it, maybe see it differently. We're going to spend the next several weeks exploring this, whether it's in our climate or it's in our political world or it's in your body or it's in your thought life or it's in the community or relationships and all these places where when we look at it, all we see is the problems and all we see is the pain of it. I'm going to invite you to enter into that pain. We together are going to walk into it with each other, because that's the place that Christ is. Between the two, on the cross, there he is in the midst. Matthew chapter 9 is our reading for today. Matthew chapter 9, verse 12 through 13, it says this: but when he heard this, and he's responding to some folks that are, well, let me just read it first, and then I'll get back to that. When he heard this, he said, "Those who are well don't need a doctor, but the sick do. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I didn't come to call the righteous, but sinners." Now, when was the last time that you felt like the world was well? Those who are well don't need a doctor, but the sick do. But for real, just pause. Like, when was the last time you just, like, looked out the door and you're like, yeah, all is right with the world. Everything's well. Everyone's just totally getting it. It's been a while. And that's kind of the irony of this statement. It's like you know, hey, the well people don't need a doctor, but the sick do. And but why then are we avoiding the sick? Why then are we avoiding the pain if that's the place where the source of healing comes? That's the space that Christ enters into. And this is what his message is. You see, he's with a group of folks who most of us would look at and say, I probably wouldn't associate with them. He's hanging out with the tax collectors and the sinners. You can read right in front of it. He's hanging with the people on the naughty list, the people who are the source of your pain. That's who he's with. That's who he has made his good company. And some folks come and challenge him on this, and he's just like, you know, hey, the well don't need a doctor, but this community does. But then he says to them, go learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I don't come to call the righteous, but the sinners. And we could get, like, you know, a real sort of surface level reading here and just be like, see, you know, like, it's all about just loving each other and not, you know, just two wrongs don't make a right or something like that. But Jesus is ushering in something here very profound. He's trying to get us to think about this idea that in the world of exchange, in the world of problems, are you looking to avoid your problems or to make transactions, if you will, so that everything balances out? Are you the kind of person who needs things to just work out perfectly? Or are you going to create margin for mercy? Are you going to create space where things can't be accounted for? Are you going to allow for those that are really broken to be around you, where it's going to require you to sort of wake up to the thing that's way deeper than the avoiding things at the surface, but you're going to have to crawl real deep down in there and grab for something more substantive? And Jesus here is just saying, like, I'm here for that. I'm here to show what that world looks like. And we're going to unpack this a little more today, because the truth is we're all sick, especially those that think they're not. But perhaps we're unable to see it. And this is why we all need the incarnate Jesus, the Christ who comes in the form of a person to show us what it means to be able to exist in a reality where there is pain, exist in a reality where there is suffering. He shows us what it means to experience life. It gives us hope because he demonstrates by way of entering into it. And if he's taking the lead, we need to follow. Now I get it. In our age, we've struggled with this because in the modern age, the mind and what it can measure has become the authority. Hope hinges on what can be proven. The material world then, of course, becomes our ultimate reality. This is what we call modernism. And in that world, we've made a playing field where the only thing that it can produce is that which we can touch and feel. And if that's not good enough at the end of the day, guess what? You're going to find yourself quite hopeless. And yet that's the world that we've found ourselves in. A world where we need that arena of reason to sustain us. We need answers to keep us going. We need everything to sort of square up. And if it doesn't square up, what are we going to do? Because the world of science and the world of reason, these aren't bad things, but these worlds promise us progress, and they promise us prescriptions, and they promise you all sorts of things. They promise you doctors and fixers and all kinds of things. They promise you the same narrative that the hopeless are always, they promise you an escape. They promise you a way out. But is it enough? Has it satisfied you? If we look back historically, when modernism hits its height, it's interesting to me that that's at the same time that we enter into a world war. And that in this world war, we experience the Holocaust. And in this hope of modernism, we experience Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We, in the promise and the hope of modernism, we experience death and destruction. That's what the age of modernism produced for us. And what we found coming out of the Second World War was a lot of skeptics then, who started to say, wait a second, maybe all this stuff, maybe all these things, and these early sort of signs started to show up of questioning this authority and saying, is it really enough? Is this really progress? Is this really predictable? Because it was supposed to mean less disease and less war and less illness and more hope and more power, but it seems to be only less and less of it. Before too long, our foundations are shaken, our patterns are disrupted, our stable ground feels less stable than ever. Enter postmodernism, a new promise of hope. Except for now, nothing's fixed, it's liquid. What we've trusted before can no longer be trusted. Trust yourself. And then we see a great rise in depression, anxiety, violence. The violence takes on a more personal, intimate nature increasingly. The thing that we were hoping in wasn't satisfying. In this world, there's no inherent value in anything. Only can what this or that do for me. And we see this shell of capitalism begin to establish itself. And again, these aren't all bad things in themselves, but they're bad things when they become our hope alone. We begin to become very transactional, temporal. We begin to become necessitating outcome. Our religion gets included in it and it becomes a means for order and control. We pray to get instead of pray to be. We use priests to prop up our order and systems of structure instead of to be voices against anything but the foundation of Christ. And we find ourselves in a void of union, a void of value, a void of mystery, a void of the holy. See, this is Jesus addresses the whole cosmos. It's not just us. And systemically across the whole, we are caught up in the spirit of the age. And we need to discern this. The world is always going to tell you it has a means to an end. But our posture as followers of Jesus, who looks at Jesus in a world that is totally imperialistic, and he just says, no, there's the way in the world of power and violence is the way of powerlessness and nonviolence. The way of union is the way of being with those who are beaten and broken. The way of understanding the depths of your souls is in the company of the poor. And it's in the poverty lines, and it's in the margins of society. What comes after postmodernism, I don't think I have to tell you, but it's nihilism. It's just outright meaningless. A rejection of purpose and potential. It's complete hopelessness, except in oneself. The last desperate attempt of hope is always to trust yourself. The world of the individual, the world of the influencers, the world of look at me, I have the knowledge, I have what you're looking for. Where we grasp and cling for every emotion and feeling to, and we allow everything to be, every feeling and emotion that we have to be the ultimate authority. We've lost all grounding. Now every time we're upset with anything, that becomes the tyrant. That becomes the judge. And with it, we become angry and alienated, disappointed. We learn to hate one another because all we can count on is me. In this world of the individual, don't be fooled. There is no faith, there is no love, and there is no communion. There isn't. It's just you. It's just me. I don't want that world. That world is a bitter end. It's the way of the devil. Total isolation. You're all you've got. Don't listen to that voice. How am I doing for a series on hope? See, if I'm honest, I'm trying to take us to a dark place because it's there that hope sits. It's there where our rational thinking no longer serves us, at the edge of our ending, in the midst of crisis. It's there in the emptiness of our postmodernism, where there is no security left, no transactions to be made to make it out. When our soul becomes totally starved, grasping for everything but nothing, that hope shows up. That's the space of Jesus. But when he heard this, he said, "Those who are well don't need a doctor. The sick do. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. I didn't come to call the righteous, but the sinners." The space where Christ is most present and available in is in the space we avoid. Not just in our world, but in ourselves. Imagine if our world embraced mercy at all of its illusions of power. Imagine if all our systems and structures chose mercy. They'd have to feel. They'd have to turn on the compassion. They'd have to go into the depths of themselves, which is the very thing they avoid, the place of Christ. How else can we learn what this means but in our own brokenness? By turning in and looking at our own sorrow and being present to our own pain and to one another's. Where else can we learn of a good doctor except at the hospital bed of our inner sanctuary? Where else can we meet the one who comes to take care of the poor and sick except for with the poor and sick? All the places that are desperate need of Jesus are the places where you're going to find Jesus and where we're going to find hope. This is what I mean. We can't get to hope by going around the storm. We need to go through it. This is what Jesus did, by the way, when he entered into the world. He could have just gone straight around to resurrection. So no, I'm going to be birthed into the world of chaos and pain and all the stuff, and I'm going to submit myself as an infant to the hands of a refugee, and I'm going to be ushered into existence by a poor family, and I'm going to be carried up, and it's in this world that he conquers death and resurrects. All the healings, all the miracles, all of it, he's always looking past the things that we look at and looking at the things we avoid. And that's where he is. The Word became flesh, John 1:14. The Word became flesh and took up residence among us. We observed his glory. The glory is the one and only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. Jesus shows us the way. He chooses the path. He places himself amongst the criminals, the drunks, the sinners, the sick, all of it. And it's there that we meet the fullness of grace and truth. This is the cup we must drink and the baptism we must experience. Jesus tells us this in Mark chapter 10, verse 39. We are able, they told him, because, just to back up, his disciples are saying, hey, we can drink that cup and experience that baptism. He goes, yeah, really? You think so? They said, we're able, he told them. Jesus said to them, well, you will drink the cup I drink, and you will be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. And he goes on to talk about the suffering that he's about to experience. See, in our folly, we want to say, yeah, I can handle it. But the truth is, we have to go into this. That our real teacher, our real immersion is the baptism into the pain and the suffering. Into the place where the Spirit really is. You will be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with, and you will drink the cup I drink. This cup is not a cup we would normally choose. This baptism is not one we would normally choose. But they're the ones that will teach us. They were ones that will give us an understanding that we couldn't get if we didn't go through it. And it's there that we learn the depths of our foolishness, the foolishness of winning, the foolishness of avoiding pain, the foolishness of trying to make it ourselves through this. It's here that we see that the beautiful way, the good way, the rich life, is possible. It's there that we see how big love really is. It's here that the body becomes the body. Not one part, but many. Paul says, baptized by one Spirit into one body, to drink the cup of one Spirit. That's what he talks about in Corinthians. He says, you want to experience God? It'll require you to do it together, to pass the cup, to share the bread. Everything that we're avoiding is everything that Jesus is calling us to. Everything we don't want to see is everything that Jesus does see. So where do we begin? We're just going to work our way through this over 8 weeks. And today I want to begin with our physical bodies. I want to practice what we just talked about. Can we together share the cup of each other's pain and suffering? Can we together hold our bodies before one, our physical bodies before the body of Christ? And can we invite Jesus to speak to it? Can we do that? So I want to ask us a question. It's going to come up here on the screen. And I want us to take a few minutes to just kind of talk to Jesus. So let's together, let's contemplatively together ask this question. How is Jesus inviting you to have hope for your body? How is Jesus inviting you to have hope for your body? And the goal here is to let him speak to you, to go to the place of pain and discomfort, and to let him sit with you, speak to you. And then together, for us to acknowledge it and to pray together, and we'll do that in a minute. But first, let's talk to Jesus. Let's take a minute together. Let's do that now.